Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
What is up, Super Ninfriendos? I am Seth Macy. This is NVC 685, and have we got a freaking show for you today. Joining us from the studio, we have Reb Scoops McScoops Valentine.
Scoops McScoops, I like it. I get better nicknames every single week, I feel like.
Every single week. Between you and our special surprise guest, we have Marie. What up, Marie?
I'm sharing the studio with some great pals today.
Yeah, this is really cool. I'm thrilled to announce the podcast collaboration between IGN and Kinda Funny. It begins and ends right here. None of the other ones matter. We have Tim Geddes on NVC, the best podcast, the best Tim that I know of. Tim, what is up?
Thank you. Let Tim host, everybody. Of course, I am Tim Geddes. I am making my valiant return to Nintendo Voice Chat. Back in my day, the last time I was here, it was the year of Luigi, Reb.
That's how long ago it was
when I was on NVC.
Wow. You're really old.
That's actually, I don't know, technically true. I think the last NVC I was on was when Twitch was playing Pokemon. So, I don't remember which one was older, but one of those two was my last NVC appearance, which was absolutely wild. But I'm thrilled to
yourself.
Be here. Yeah.
Yes. Very ancient.
Well, yeah. Really excited.
Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
We're stoked to have you here. And of course, we are joined from outside the studio, industry legend, Kat Bailey. How's it going, Kat?
Year of Luigi's ancient history. I don't even want to know. But legendary year, for sure.
Yeah. I like the way you phrase that with her outside the studio, as if we're in here and she's just like sitting in a hallway
right outside.
Yeah, she's on a stool outside.
I've been displaced by Giant Marie.
Yeah, we didn't have enough room for Kat in here if we brought the Marie bin. And obviously,
we did have room for Kat in our studio just a couple days ago on the Kind of Funny Games cast. Everyone should check out. She did absolutely amazing. It was
I'm bragging about your studio. Yeah. Starting the fights already.
Hey, you know, no, it's not fights. It's all about the love. This week's been great. We've been having so many fun collaborations. Like, we're the podcast Beyond's crossing over with PSL Love You. We have XCast crossing over with Unlocked. And we don't have a Nintendo show, which makes me very, very sad. I'm also the one in charge of those decisions. But it makes me very, very, very sad. So I'm happy to be here to talk about Nintendo with y'all.
Well, you know how to call if you ever the start host... one, Mary.
Exactly.
As the host of the number one Nintendo podcast in the world, I'm glad you guys don't have a Nintendo podcast at the moment. So before we get going, is anybody else extremely hot? Is it really hot to anybody? I guess you aren't in the same state as me, but hold on a second.
It's a little warm.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Oh, yeah. Let's see. What's going on here?
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yes, it's okay. Cool off, Seth.
Is that...
I gotta...
What you got there?
A Super Nintendo shirt?
Wow!
Whoa! Wow. Where can people get that?
Oh, wow. I completely forgot I was wearing this t-shirt that's exclusive to the IGN store. It's a timed exclusive. You can only get it for 2 weeks. This is part of the IGN Shirt Club, which is a little thing we do on the IGN store. But yeah, people have been asking since I coined the catchphrase, which was the first episode I hosted, for a Super Ninfrendo shirt. And check it out.
Wow.
I love it.
It looks so good emblazoned on that chest.
Mine's
thank
mail.
You. I've been working out.
Mine's coming tomorrow, and I'm really upset that it wasn't here today to do the show.
It's great.
Okay, goof is over. It's actually freezing down here, so I have to put my jacket back on. But yeah, so if you're wondering why Tim is here, other than the fact that we've been just wanting to have Tim on here, there is an IGN crossover Kind of Funny stream in support of Extra Life, which you can tune into on Friday. That's tomorrow. If you're listening to this the day it released, it's gonna all go down. You're gonna have your favorite IGN Kind of Funny personalities will be there, like Tim and Greg and Charlie the janitor. Mm-hmm. Is gonna be there. Musical performance by Marky Marker and the Wahlbergs.
Yep. True.
Sadly, Funky Bunch could not make it. They had some scheduling issues. They couldn't get the day off at Five Guys. But also, make sure to check out the Humble Bundle IGN Editor's Choice Bundle, which is live right now. 9 games that scored a 9 or above, meaning they're what? They're either amazing or they're masterpieces. Sadly, no amazing masterpieces because that's a score of 19, and that's just, the laws of physics limit us from going that high. So we'd also originally planned on doing a bundle with all the 7s we've given, but it crashed the database. So anyway, that is in support of Girls Who Code and as well as Extra Life. It's awesome. Those are like legit really excellent games, and there's like a lot of people are really stoked on this, and I'm so excited that everyone's checking it out. Also, you get a coupon to the store where maybe you could buy a shirt. I don't know, you get a little IGN Plus bonus there too, so please check that out. Now, Tim.
Yes, Seth, you're a funny guy. I don't think enough people tell you that you're a funny one.
He's very funny.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Now see, that makes it extra special. Thank you for that. You've come here to you've taken umbrage with maybe some of the things that we've been saying over the last few weeks in regards to our tier listing of the Mario games. We did 2 episodes. The first one was we tier listed the 2D Marios. The second was the 3D. I was not here for 3D, which is why.
But we were correct.
No, you were wrong about Super. You're all wrong about Super Mario 64 not being an S tier game. But that's okay. But Tim. What are your thoughts?
So last night I watched the episode of y'all ranking and tiering the 3D Mario games. And, you know, of course, Mario, both 2D and 3D, very near and dear to my heart. So I went in like any normal person would, ready to fight. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like, who do I agree with and who do I not agree with? And the thing about Mario games, 2D and 3D, is... turns out they're all pretty damn great, if not all amazing. Yep. So it's like
Mario Sunshine.
Yeah. And, well, okay.
What's wrong with you?
Now, look, I'm not quite as high on it as you are. I'm definitely not as low on it as you are, Kat. But what's fun is it's funny, and I think Kat said this in the episode, that like when we're talking about like, is it like a C tier, B tier, whatever? Sure, relative to other Mario games, but relative to other games, it's like, no, it's A tier. Like I think pretty much all the Mario games are at least A tier, with very rare exception. I think Mario Land, we were talking about, I feel like that to me is the one that the only good thing about it, or the only great thing about it, is the music. Really love that. But otherwise, that one's a little bit not my fave. Yeah. I do want to give a major shout out though to the love for Yoshi's Island here, because I'm looking at this list and it has an S plus ranking from somebody, and I'm like, wow, there's some taste here at IGN. I really respect that. Yoshi's Island, greatest of all time. You know, doesn't get nearly enough love. And one that got a little too much hate from y'all, though. Super Mario 64.
Agreed.
DS. All right, here's the thing. Now, Super Mario 64, I'm with you. It should be S tier. I also agree 100% with the fact that the second half of the game is not as strong as the first half in terms of the levels. But in terms of the magic, come on, man. Mario 64 is a game that I replay to 100% like once every couple years.
On a DS?
No, I play it. I play it in other ways. I just want to give a shout out to the DS version. It getting like C's and D's. I don't necessarily disagree. I just want to say I think that game gets a bad rap. First off, I'm not a fan of the DS overall. So I don't like the look of the games. I don't like the inputs of the controls of all of it. So I'm not the biggest fan of that.
Damn, you're breaking my heart right here. Oh, my God.
You play Mario 64 DS on a 3DS where it has an analog stick. It's the cheat code. All of a sudden, it's still not perfect because you still have to like hold the run button, which is weird. Yeah. But in a post-Mario 3D Land world, playing Mario 64 DS on a 3DS, pretty damn good. A lot more better camera control than Mario 64 original. Some of the extra content, not the best, but the multiple playable characters, I think is actually pretty cool and adds to the experience. I do not think it comes close to the original Mario 64, but I think that this one gets a bad rap overall.
When it came out, was the 3DS also out?
Was the DS launch game.
I don't know that, because I saw some people in the comments also were saying you just use the 3DS stick, like it's fine. I don't know that you can make that argument, because like, yeah, there's probably a lot of games out there that benefit from controllers or from like platform ports that came out after the fact, but
you're right. So that's
your solid
true,
3DS.
But just putting things into context then of like giving it the flowers it deserves for the time it came out, it was Mario 64 portable. And back then that was absolutely wild. Like this is a DS launch game. This was before PSP, I want to say. So it's like months, but like it was like right in there. And like now we're just so used to it where it's like Switch games are handheld and like it's the console, it's portable, it's all the same thing. Yeah. But like I remember being mind blown that I was playing Mario 64 with new content anywhere I wanted to go. Sure, it didn't control perfectly, but neither did the original.
It's like you said, like, are we rating this in contrast to other Mario games, in which it probably is like considerably lower, or are we rating it in contrast to every other game, in which case the worst Mario game is probably at worst B+.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, I think I would say Mario Land is down there. New Super Mario Brothers 2, the 3DS one.
Oh, the ones that I get mixed up. Yeah.
You just collect all the coins.
Yeah, it's the coin one.
It was a weird gimmick game, wasn't it?
New Super Mario Bros. U, I don't think gets enough credit. I think these days it's starting to eventually, like people finally like showing the love that it deserves for the level design and like its varied bosses, and the map is actually kind of interesting as opposed to New Super Mario Bros. Wii or DS or any of those. I feel like the Wii U game's gonna forever just be forgotten.
Unfortunately.
But the Year of Luigi.
Year of Luigi, baby. Never forget that. It was important. Core memory.
Every year were the Year of Luigi.
Yeah.
It can be if you keep Luigi in your heart.
Yeah.
I do.
The spirit of Luigi is with us at all times.
Yeah, but overall,
I kind of think Luigi.
Y'all have good taste. I'll say that. Yeah.
It's hard not to when you're talking about Mario.
Yeah, and like the Mario Galaxy games are just utterly incredible. The thing that I'm happy that you guys did was give 3D World as much love as you did, because that game's fantastic. And I feel like people write it off because, you know, people don't like the Wii U. So it's like, all right, cool, whatever. Right. They forget about it. But like 3D World is incredible. And I think it is a top tier Mario game, whether you're talking 2D, 3D, the whatever this is in between. Like, it is fantastic. You add Bowser's Fury to that, and it's just like, man, one of the most like perfect packages of platforming ever.
Yeah. I had written off 3D World. Like, I didn't play it when it first came out, and then I played it. Well, I think I might have played it a little bit, but like not to completion, but I played the whole thing when Bowser's Fury came out, and I was blown away.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah. One of the best boss fights in a Mario game is the final boss fight against, I don't want to spoil it.
It's amazing.
It's Bowser.
Yeah, oh yeah. No, but I mean, you're right. Like, mechanically, it's just, it's exciting. It's epic. And I feel like the epicness is something we rarely get in Mario. I feel like Mario Galaxy is definitely like the best example of it, with like the bombastic score and like the absolutely wild boss fights. But yeah, some of the 3D world, I feel like it's easily the best multiplayer. Like, it's multiplayer that actually works in Mario. Yep. And it's fun. And the level design is varied enough. And the getting 100% is fun. Like, the challenge levels, right? The way that this game is paced out, like, I hope we get another one. Because 3D Land blew my mind. I was like, dang, Mario 3D Land? Like, I never thought we'd get a obstacle-based platformer in 3D for Mario. And that was like, wow, this is so good. And then Worlds, I mean, it really felt like Mario 1 to Mario 3. Going from Mario Land to 3D World.
I'll say it. I know they're not the same kind of game, but I enjoyed playing co-op in World more than I'm enjoying co-op in Mario Wonder.
Whoa.
Oh, I don't even think that's a hot take.
I have so much trauma from my experience with 3D World's co-op, because the people I was playing with absolutely loved trolling me in every way possible. So when you're on the dinosaur or whatever that was, or the Lapras that was going down the slide.
Plessy.
Such a good part.
I love Plessy.
And we would have, and everybody was supposed to steer together, except one member of our party would always just go yoink instead of flying off the cliff for reasons, or throw me off the cliff.
The problem I'm having with Wonder is that because it's a 2D Mario, it tends to be a little more fast paced, and I'm like a slow, careful Mario player. Like, I take my time, I sit there, I judge the jump, and then I go, okay, here we go. But my partner is a fast paced platformer guy, and so he just goes, and he's playing first player, and so the camera just follows him, and I'm just constantly in a bubble going, wee.
Yeah, exactly. It's so funny how you can just be such a masochist when it comes to Mario 3D World with the multiplayer.
Oh, yeah.
Back in 2020, when we were all working from home, we decided that we were going 100% the game, four player.
Oh, my gosh.
With me, Snowbike Mike, Nick Scarpino, and Andy Cortez, and playing online. For a Nintendo game, a 3D platformer. It was a horrible decision, but somehow we pulled it off. We even the challenge levels and everything, but to Kat's point, that Plessy level was a nightmare. Like, I think I've woken up in cold sweats recently just being like, never again. Like, that was horrible trying to coordinate online with lag and everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Dear Lord. Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about Mario Wonder kind of towards the end of the show, but I think since we've brought the subject up now, just makes organic sense to talk about it. Kat, you wanted to, I think, change up your opinion, your stated opinion on the official record from last week?
Oh my God, putting me on the spot.
I mean, I'm sorry. I could just talk about how I beat it.
My opinion's been going up on it. I've finished several more worlds. I think I'm on like world 6 now at this point. So there's a couple more worlds to go. And it's been getting a lot more diverse and a lot more ambitious, and the worlds have been getting bigger. And the thing that stands out to me is Mario Wonder encompasses a surprisingly large number of classic Mario experiences.
Yeah.
Including OG Mario 2, which is not something that I was expecting, but I really enjoyed. And there were some nice puzzle levels in there. I found a whole world that just felt like a giant Mario World tribute, maybe to like Vanilla Dome or something like that. Like the Magma Bog feels very Mario World, think. I'm now on the Mushroom Bog or whatever it's called. But I really enjoyed the desert level, which just felt like an extended tribute to Mario 2. And I like the variety. And it's just a lot of fun to play. It's very joyful, I think.
It is a very joyful game. I think that that is probably the, if you were going to describe this game in one word that wasn't Wonder.
Also, I've come around on Elephant Mario. I wasn't sure about him, but he's my go-to power-up for the most part.
He's good.
Nice. Awesome. Reb, you had an important news bulletin This is why your scoops McScoop.
Yeah, actually. So I've also been playing Wonder. I'm not quite as far along as Kat. I'm taking it a little slowly. And I learned something. I believe Red has an image that I was hoping he'd show regarding this. So
up on the screen.
If you'll recall, there was a debate several years ago when I think Mario Odyssey came out, whether or not Toad's mushroom was a head or a hat.
Yeah.
There were extensive articles written mm-hmm. about examining this. And some of the evidence that was presented was in the animation that may or may not be canon, unclear.
But not canonical.
Toad fully removes its mushroom and it seems to be a hat. There's also I think in one of the games, Toad has an electrocution animation. You can look inside the skull and there's nothing inside the mushroom. Mm. There's no skeleton in the mushroom. But then there's also in Mario Odyssey, Toad wears headphones, not down where you would expect the ears to be, but up on the mushroom, indicating there might be ears in there? Mm-hmm. Unclear. Anyway, Mario Wonder has officially canonically settled this debate. One of the little tips that appears on a loading screen, which I'm hoping we can pull up here in a second, proves definitively that it is in fact a head, not a hat.
Whoa.
Wow.
And I just wanted everyone to know that.
I'm happy we can move
detachable?
On with our lives.
The hat's
no,
detachable?
No, it's his head.
It's not detachable.
The head's detachable?
It's his head. Yeah, here we go.
There it
is. Toads are residents of the Mushroom Kingdom, and those are their heads, not big hats.
Wow, they actually explicitly confirm it. Okay, cool.
Just said the thing.
Yeah.
Damn, this game really
is a
wonder.
So it can detach like a snake's tail.
I don't think they don't detach. They're supposed to be stuck on there. I think what's happening here is the animation is being rendered non-canonical.
Mm.
Okay, well, that's good because that show kind of sucks, actually. It's not a good that. Millie Vanilli did a guest appearance on that show.
Awesome.
I remember that episode. It was awkward. But so yeah,
officially,
I didn't get to talk about Mario Wonder because I wasn't here last week. But I finished it over the weekend. It's probably the first game that I've actually finished this year. I don't finish games.
Whoa!
I just don't. I don't finish games. I just play them and derive the joy out of just playing them. Mm-hmm. So I played it. I beat it. I enjoyed it a lot. But I think it's a 7 for me, honestly. I think it's good, not great for me. Now, that being said, it's a weird thing because I love everything. I don't know. It's so weird. I didn't feel from playing it the same sort of joy that I've gotten from other Mario games, with a few exceptions. But yeah, I love the animation, obviously. I love Elephant Mario. He's a big hefty boy who sprays water and feeds flowers. But overall, yeah, it felt like too short, maybe. I don't know, something about it just didn't sit right with me when I beat it. Now, that's not saying in the comments, please, actually, no, argue in the comments. It's great for engagement.
It's over. You're doomed.
I know I'm doomed. I thought it was a 7 game. I loved it, but I thought it was a 7. So
I'm not arguing with you about your personal opinion because that would be insane.
No, you should. My opinion can be wrong.
I do think it's interesting that this is the one game you finished to completion this year, but you also just feel like, yeah, it was good. It wasn't spectacular.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's an interesting combination of thoughts for me.
Well,
you're
because I was...
It.
Look, this is the thing, is what I wanted to put my money where my mouth was, because while I was playing, I was like, I'm having a good time. This is a fun game. It's really pretty. It's really charming, but I think it's a 7, but I better beat it before I go on NBC, the world's number one Nintendo podcast, and say that in front of all the Ninfriendos who now are like Ninenemies.
I see.
They all hate me.
How's Tears of the Kingdom coming?
I will never finish that game.
Oh, man.
I never want that game to end, ever.
The end of it is so good.
Yeah, I like I said a million times, spread my ashes in that Hyrule somehow when I'm gone. I don't care how you do it. Digitize me and just shoot me out of a cannon and let me land in a field in Hyrule. I don't care. And I'm never going to... No, that's not true. I'm going to finish it. You know what? I'm going to make that my...
Wow.
I think to do this
worth
weekend.
Finishing.
Do you think
Absolutely.
We can convince him that that Mario Wonder is actually an 8?
You know, actually an 8. I see that there's an interesting conversation we had here, Seth. You're definitely the lowest I've heard anybody be on Mario Wonder. And I'm higher than you for sure. I would not give it a 7 on the kind of funny scale, which is 1 to 5. I gave it a 4 and everyone got really upset with me because they think it deserves a 5. And I can understand it being a 5 to a lot of people. But I, as a Mario super, super, super fan, like, again, I 100% these games. Like, I love them. And I don't 100% many games.
Right.
I think that this game does so much perfectly, but there's a couple steps back in a lot of ways. Like the boss fights, or lack thereof, I think is kind of upsetting. The lack of variation, the lack of characters in them as well, like really feels like, I know we're kind of at this point sick of the Koopa kids, but the decision they made in this game, I feel was like worse than that. It was like, all right, that's interesting. Some of the boss levels, there's not even a boss. You just kind of go from left to right, and it's really
you jump on
odd.
A switch.
Yeah. So some of those things, like, I feel like make it a little bit uneven of a experience. But overall, the highs are so high in the game. But even then, I feel like we keep talking about the Wonder Seeds having every level has the jump up superstar moment from Mario Odyssey. But I don't know that any of them are as good as the jump up superstar moment in Mario Odyssey. And again, I'm now critiquing
something
except
that the
I think
singing is great. Piranha Plants.
Wow,
which was awesome. I feel like that is definitely a highlight of the game. I'm like 99.9% done with the entire game, like all the secrets and everything. Like I have all the flagpoles, all the purple coins, everything. I'm only on the final level, and it's very hard, and it's very rewarding. I spent about an hour playing through it, and I have not conquered it yet. I will one day, but a lot of content in this game. I feel like, Seth, to your point about it being a little on the shorter side, I do feel like once you beat it, there's a very satisfying amount of content after, and it's not overwhelming. I feel like some of the Mario games recently, it's like you beat the game and it's like there's five extra worlds after, and I'm like, that's a little too much. I feel like there's
more moons. Here you go.
Exactly. I think this is it's the right amount of content, and I feel like they really push for quality over quantity in this one. But like I get where you're coming from with the seven. I think it's a little low, but I think that there's something about this that I feel people that didn't play the last like four Mario games, the new Super Mario Brothers series, or the people that just wrote them off because they're on the Wii U or for a multitude of reasons. Like, it's been 10 years since we got a new 2D Mario. That's like, right. And the last one was Mario Wii U, which everybody like had a bone to pick with. So I feel like a lot of people are playing this and they're like, it's amazing. And I'm like, compared to Mario Wii U, I don't know how much more amazing it is. I think it's better, but like, I don't know that I do. I don't know that I do. We'll have to wait and see a couple years from now how I think back. Because I will say, Seth.
Yes.
This game's grown on me. The last couple weeks that I've been thinking about it, I'm like, all right, I still stand by my 4 out of 5, but I think I might be a little too harsh on it for how fondly I am thinking about it in the off time.
Can I? Sure.
It's nice. And also, though, I liked the Kirby game from last year more.
Oh, me too.
Oh,
me too.
Yeah,
for sure. What?
And I think this is I think we have just really high standards for Mario platformers. And so it can throw things off a little bit. I think there's so much that this game does right. I love the mobility that the patches afford. I got the second aerial jump, the double jump badge, and I've been really enjoying that, for example. Also, sorry, Jada, I switched over to Daisy. It's my main character.
Dang, those are fine.
Shout out. Having a great time.
There was a lot of Daisy defenders in the comments last week.
Yeah.
So awesome.
Not too Rosalina, baby.
I think it does accessibility really well and better than a lot of older Mario games. It's often very beautiful, and a lot of the levels are very clever. I think that I keep waiting for that moment that sends it above and beyond and makes it absolutely transcendent. Because Mario games, very high floor, very high, very, very high ceiling.
Yep. And I said when we had Ryan McCaffrey on to talk about his review, and we were talking about that moment in Super Mario Odyssey was, you know, maybe my favorite video game like moment that I've ever experienced as far as just like joy. While I was playing through that level in New Donk City and just smiling. And like the whole, I couldn't believe that was part of it. And I think maybe you're right. I think I was spoiled from that and I was expecting something equivalent in this one and it never came. And, you know, it kind of didn't sour me on it, but I guess I was a little bit disappointed. Also, the final boss battle wasn't that great.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people also got spoiled on Mario Maker. Because Mario Maker, people, like players, spent years crafting every possible kind of Mario level you could want. Levels that are surprising, levels that are extremely difficult, levels that have cool boss fights. I mean, yeah, they can't like create new bosses, but they can reconfigure Bowser in ways that are like super interesting to defeat him. You know, people created cute little puzzles and things full of hidden secrets and impossible levels and anything that you could think of. It was in Mario Maker somewhere. And so I think after so many years, the 10-year gap between Nintendo designed 2D Marios, the 2D Mario everyone was playing was a Mario Maker.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think people got
Mario Maker ruined me on Mario.
Yeah.
I also think but that there's go for it, Kat.
Mario Maker ruined me on Mario in the sense that Kaizo levels were so dispiriting that it made me feel like everything I had ever thought about Mario was a lie and that I was never actually good at Mario.
Oh my
and
gosh.
It ruined me in the same way that Street Fighter playing competitive Street Fighter ruined me on Street Fighter and fighting games overall.
It's depressing, Kat.
And so I have huge PTSD about Mario Maker. I just want to say that, but they're very fun to watch in streams.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I also think that in addition to there being the 10-year gap, and even before that 10-year gap, it was 10 years of back-to-back-to-back-to-back new Super Mario Brothers games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that 10-year gap, we saw the rise of 2D platformers that we hadn't seen since the 90s with the retro kind of revolution. And, like, Super Meat Boy changed the game. And then you continue that along to, like, things like Celeste. Our expectations for a 2D platformer, I mean, like, even Mario has a lot to kind of like achieve because it's being compared now not just against itself and against Sonic the Hedgehog, not throwing shade, I love my boy Sonic, but let's be real, Mario is Mario. But Mario versus Celeste, Mario versus Super Meat Boy, different conversation. It's not like, oh, Mario wins. It's like, oh, there's a conversation there. But to Wonder's credit, I do think that it is the closest. We talk a lot about Mario 3D World and Galaxy to an extent, feeling like 3D versions of the 2D games. This very much feels like a 2D version of Odyssey.
Yeah, I agree.
Which I think is interesting. And it reminds me more of Yoshi's Island than any Mario game we've had. The lack of the timer, the focus on exploration and collecting things, and the puzzles, the way that the levels are designed. I really appreciate it. And it's funny because I'm such a Yoshi's Island stan that, like, I know there's like a lot of back and forth of, does it count as a core Mario game? Does it not? I really don't care at the end of the day. Any chance to talk about the game, I'm excited.
It says Super Mario World 2.
Exactly.
Core Mario game.
I know.
We're allowed to make up our own rules when we make lists. Who cares?
I just feel like my argument in my heart now after Wonder is that Yoshi's Island is more a Mario game than it ever has been, because in terms of gameplay, it's like Wonder really kind of feels like a sequel to that in terms of the way the game is set up and like the focus of the game and the power-ups, even like how weird it all is. But yeah, I really enjoy the kind of like 2D version of a 3D Mario game that Wonder is, and I hope that we get more of that. Having said that, I hope we don't get Mario Tunder. All right. I want the next Mario 2D Mario game to just be something completely different. Like, and I feel like we'll see.
Great return to form for 2D Mario.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah,
that's what I'll say.
It's really fun. Look,
I think also
it's joyful.
Like Tim, you mentioned that, you know, it is just like it's against the other Mario games. And I think maybe I'm being unnecessarily harsh because it is a Mario game. And maybe if this were like a Rayman game, I probably would like be like, oh, it's an 8 or a 9.
Well, that's my other problem too. And man, I'm going to get so much hate in the comments, and I guess it's deserved to some extent. But like, my problem is I'm a 2D platformer fan. Yeah. So I did play Celeste. I did play Rayman Origins and Legends. I did play Donkey Kong Country Returns and Tropical Freeze. So a lot of the wow moments in this game, I'm like, I've seen this in Rayman. Mm-hmm. I've seen this in Donkey Kong. I've seen it done better. And like, that is disheartening to me, because as cool as the Piranha Plant moment is in level 2.
Yeah.
I've seen it in Rayman.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. There have been some spectacular 2D platformers, and I put Tropical Freeze up there, I put Celeste up there.
Yep. Yeah.
Both of them do some really fantastic stuff, and Mario Wonder has a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting that you mentioned Tropical Freeze, because as promised by this headline, we have 1,000% more Donkey Kong on this episode than any other show on the internet. This is due in large part to the fact that November 21st we're not going to have a show that week because it's Thanksgiving, but that was 29 years ago when a little game called Donkey Kong Country came out to the Super Nintendo. But also, more recently and more importantly, and also thank you, Logan, for pointing out the obvious thing that I was completely glossing over in our planning meeting. We've got some more Donkey Kong than we've ever had before in the Wave 6 of the Mario Kart Deluxe.
Mm-hmm.
Final track, we're getting DK Mountain, which personally is one of my all-time favorite.
I love DK Mountain, yeah.
Yeah. I love Double Dash and DK Mountain. Uh-huh. Like, you get shot out of a barrel.
Oh,
come
my God.
Frig on.
That was so cool at the time. Yeah. I know, like, every other Mario Kart course now has getting shot out of cannons or weird crud. That was really cool in Double Dash. I love that.
Yeah. And now it's in Wave 6 of the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Oh, a little update on Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. I still haven't found my copy.
No.
So I've not played a single track.
God, that breaks my heart.
I know. I'm probably just going to have to buy a new copy of that game. They're so little.
Another copy of that game sold?
I lost my copy too, Seth. That's why I'm reluctant to buy physical editions of Switch games, because I lost both Smash Brothers and Mario Kart 8 at various points. So I've purchased Smash Brothers twice.
Okay.
I'm talking out of my butt right now. I haven't fact checked this, but I'm pretty sure that Black Friday is just around the corner, and I'm pretty sure that Nintendo's holiday bundle this year will be Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, and you get a Nintendo Switch with it.
You're not actually talking out of that is. They already released it on October 6th.
Yeah,
they're like, just, you know what we're going to do. Here it is. Just get it out of the way. And now everyone's like, oh, maybe they're going to do a new one with an OLED inside.
No,
they're not.
No.
Why would they break a streak? But I'm a little, because first of all, I haven't played any of the tracks. And also we're getting Diddy Kong, Pauline, and Funky Kong, which is just tremendous. Of all the Kongs, I think Funky might be up there as my favorite. I should have dressed as Funky Kong.
You should have.
I got the wraparound shades.
You should have, man.
I got a bandana.
Just do it. Don't do it for Halloween. Just do it next week.
Just do it for, like, next time I go to the gym, I just dress as Funky Kong. I just surf into the front door. They're like, sir, this is a Planet Fitness. There's the ocean's over there. But I'm going to pose a question to the panel now. Given what we have got with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, is this a more content rich game than Smash Ultimate?
No.
Well, okay, we'll move on then.
No, but I do want to talk about that for a sec though, because Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I mean, my God, it's a perfect video game. And I feel like it is the gift that keeps on giving for me personally, where, I mean, the very nature of the Switch being portable, like, this is one of my forever games. Like, anytime I'm on a plane, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do a Grand Prix. Why not? And the fact that they have added, they've doubled the amount of content in this game with these the booster courses. Wow. And, you know, maybe the quality isn't there in terms of, like, the fidelity and the design of the DLC courses compared to the main game. But the fact that they have custom music that is in the style, that jazz style of Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, like, there's just so much love. And, like, I'm so concerned about what the next Mario Kart could be. Like, obviously, you could say, all right, it'll be the Smash Brothers. All the characters will be there. But, like, cool. Besides that, like, this is just so special and so good and such an ultimate version of Mario Kart 8 that I'm blown away that, like, I'm still going to be playing this game after over a decade since Mario Kart 8 original came out. And in just a few short weeks, I'm going to be going for even more gold stars. Like, it's wild.
I mean, I think I think I've said this on this podcast before, and I cannot explain in a logical way why I have this opinion. Smash Brothers gave us Smash Brothers Ultimate, and I personally think the next thing they should do is pare way the heck back and have a much smaller roster of fighters and a much smaller roster of
just
stages.
Mario versus Luigi.
Very,
just
well, maybe
slugging
a few
it out.
More. Maybe put Fox in there, and have it be just very, very contained. Mario Kart, I don't want that. I absolutely do not want that for Mario Kart. I think the best possible follow up to Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on the Super Nintendo Switch 2 or whatever it is we're doing would be...
How did you know that's what it's called? That was embargoed information.
Whoopsies. Mm. Oops. Would be to do Mario Kart 8 Deluxe or something and have an even more upscaled, nice, polished version of literally an Everyone Is Here moment. Where they say, we have taken all the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe content, and now we're doing 5 more boosters.
So the problem with that I have is, and this is like my only criticism of where we're at with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe at this point, is that while I'm so happy we got these DLC packs, it's like not quite Ultimate. It's just so close to Ultimate. It's like almost every course ever, but it's not.
There's like a couple that are just weirdly missing.
There's not enough for there to be missing to do what you're saying of like adding it later. And I feel like at this point, like Mario Kart 9, I do want all the courses, but I hope they're in a new style. Like I hope that it's like it's totally revamped and there is a new look to it all, because we have been seeing this look since the Wii U.
Yeah.
Which like it's time to move on, I think. And to your point about Smash Brothers,
it's 10 years old.
Yeah,
this game is wild.
But to your point about Smash, like Smash is my favorite game of all time, favorite franchise of all time. But I'm with you that I think the next Smash really should like be a different game. Like I think it should like totally pare back. I want like a Street Fighter 2 to Street Fighter 3 type situation where it is like, hey, like they're the same franchise, but it's a different
Street Fighter 3, which was massively less popular than Street Fighter 2.
Yep. And I get it. I'm asking for something that like
sometimes you gotta reset.
Yeah, and I think no matter what
is a reset, what does a reset for Smash Brothers look like? I can't envision it, because with Street Fighter you could create entirely new characters, and so it's fun to create new rosters and then mix and match them. And who's going to be on this one? Whereas Smash Brothers, I feel like you have a finite pool. You can't really make characters up from whole cloth.
But I think the opportunity is to reinvent characters that we have been playing with for decades. Like, give Mario a new moveset that's actually reflective of Mario now. And, like, you can apply that to all of them. Like, they've done little tweaks here and there. Like, you look at Link over time. But, like, I feel like that is the way to breathe new blood into Smash, where you're not actually, like, making it not popular to people. It's like, no, this is just, it's new and it's fresh. And instead of Mario and Pikachu and Kirby and them having the same moveset since 1998.
Yeah.
But also I understand doing that, you're going to upset a lot of people that just want it the way that they want it, which is why I think Smash Ultimate needs to be ported to the next system and preserved forever.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed. Yeah.
Because we'll never get Cloud again. We're never going to get Sora, Sephiroth. Are you kidding me?
I was thinking about the Sora reveal yesterday. Oh. I was just like remembering it in my head. It was when I was moving to San Francisco. We were in a tiny little hotel on the side of the road in Elko, Nevada, getting ready to drive like the last 8 hours of the leg to San Francisco. And I remember Imran and I like packed all of our luggage. We were getting ready to check out. We had like two screaming cats and a cat carrier who were ready to go. And I just remember looking at him and going, we should probably watch the final Smash reveal before we go. Like, we really want to know who it is. And I had been telling all of our friends for weeks, I'm like, there's no way. Because, you know, everyone was like, I want Sora so bad, all of our Kingdom Hearts friends. I was like, there's no way. There's so much logistics involved with that. They will never put Sora in Smash. No, they put
That's
Sora
the final
in
character.
Smash. Yep. There's a Mickey Mouse Disney logo in Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah,
that is the most insane thing in video games.
The final shot of this trailer where Mario and Sora like just do the hand clasp. It's like it's the most powerful moment in world history. I'm gonna be honest. Like, I'm so happy that like we recorded our reaction to this, because it's me and Blessing, and like I rewatch that video so often just to feel something. Like it just felt like a win. It just felt like a massive win of anything can happen. Like, life is good. There's so much bad rules in the world, but Sora's in Smash, man. Like, God bless Sakurai.
No, but yeah, that'll never do it again.
It's a great reveal too.
Oh yeah, the whole way that every reveal for Smash was like everything about Smash was brilliantly executed.
So much great humor, for sure.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that again.
We won't. It makes me a little sad.
Yeah.
But we must preserve Smash Brothers Ultimate as a historical document, knowing that there will never be anything like it again.
Straight up.
Right. Even Sakurai is like, oh, I don't know. I don't know how we do that again.
Yeah.
At all. So
you don't. You go big or you go home, and you can't go bigger. So you gotta go home.
So I agree with you though, Tim. Smash Brothers Ultimate, top five, top 10 games of all time.
Oh yeah.
And just warms my heart that this game exists.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know what they can do in the next one? Just all Donkey Kongs. That was a bad segue. I'm sorry.
Seth's hard to get us to talk about Donkey Kong.
No, this is like, I don't care. Like, we have a meeting where we like do a run of show, but I just, if it weren't for the fact that I'm trying to be professional, I would just be like, so what would everybody have for lunch? Mushrooms.
Okay,
those are from Nintendo.
We're tier ranking the Kongs. S tier, Trixie Kong.
We're not tier.
What are you doing?
I don't know about that. Kitty Kong, man. I have some beef with DKC3.
Oh no, that's fine.
And it runs deep. And it's funny because I don't want to get ahead of your show here. I don't know if we're going with this. But
No. This is perfect because I can segue right in.
I just want to say, Donkey Kong Country 1, I absolutely love. I adore. It is I mean, it's just so special to me for like what it was at the time it came out. When the game first loads up and like Donkey jumps down with the boombox and the theme starts playing, it's like a hip hop remix. I'm like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, this is like the peak of masculinity. Okay, and Donkey Kong Country 2 is just it's up there with like the best platformers ever. Like, that is in the conversation with Mario games, which I think is wild, and Tropical Freeze as well. But then you get to Donkey Kong Country 3, and I'm just like, it is such a step down to me. Like, I just have never been able to wrap my head around it. And the thing is, I like playing as Diddy more than I like playing as Donkey, just with how nimble he is. And Donkey Kong Country 2 essentially just gives me two Diddies. It's Diddy and Dixie. They both play how I want them to. And then DKC3 kind of just gave me just the characters, the play styles I don't like. And so that's always been rough for me. But the audience keeps telling me I'm wrong and I need to go back and give it another shot. I never beat 3. So I feel like at some point when this rush of great new games is over, eventually, I'm going to go back and give 3 another shot.
Okay. All right. Well, the good news is it is on NSO, so you can just go back and play it anytime. But I'm glad you started with Donkey Kong Country. The first one, great place to start. So, 29 years ago that game came out, so which would have put me, in high school? Because I'm old, much older than everybody.
Wow.
But loved the hell out of that game. I used to play it with, I had a Super NES Advantage, which was like the joystick, fight stick controller. And I'd keep that on the floor. And if I needed to like swap between, I would use my foot to like tap the button to swap between Kongs.
Awesome.
A little cheat code there for you. Love the hell out of that game. 29 years ago, who would have thought? That was developed by Rare, by the way. Used Silicon Graphics workstations to pre-render the graphics, which is such a genius like move, because this 1994, the PlayStation 1 was out, and like that's all I could think about was the PlayStation 1. I knew a girl who had one, and she loaned it to us for a week. And 3 months later, when we gave it back, I decided like, man, I need to go out and buy one of these for myself. So to kind of counter that, they came up with this genius idea to render the graphics ahead of time in these, like, I don't even think they have graphical workstations anymore, because like your iPhone can render graphics now. But, you know, just spend gallons and gallons of computer power to make these graphics and then just turn them into sprites. It was so genius and such a fun game, such a challenging platformer. The Minecraft levels, I think they get a little bit too like blown out of proportion. Yeah, they're hard, but they're not impossible. You can do it. It might take you a few weeks, but this game was such a success. It was followed by 2 sequels, which, like I said earlier, both of them are on NSO. Also Donkey Kong Land on Game Boy, which I am not familiar with. Does anyone have anyone played that? It's the same thing. They pre-rendered graphics and then they put them on the 1-bit screen of the.
But it looked really impressive back in the day.
This year, I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN. It's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month, every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
I mean, what was Donkey Kong Country if not a giant technical flex from Rare the entire time? So they were saying, oh, you think it's cool that we put this on the Super Nintendo? Well, you just wait. We put it on the Game Boy, too. And if you look at it, that looks amazing for a Game Boy game. Yeah. Seriously.
It's better than really Mario good. Land.
Yeah. The thing that at the time, and I don't think we remember this as well now, Donkey Kong Country looked in freaking incredible.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen any 16-bit game like it at that time. And I think the atmosphere did a lot for it. The rain, the audio design was really strong. Especially when you were fighting bosses, looked really, really impressive. And so it was just such a perfect tech demo for late gen Super Nintendo. And, you know, of course, Nintendo got really into the whole 2.5D, 3D thing with Killer Instinct and whatnot as well. And being like, no, Super Nintendo still has some life in it, can totally compete with the PlayStation, cough, cough, cough.
Treasure Hunter, is it Treasure Hunter D? Kat, you're the RPG expert from Square that also did the same sort of pre-rendered. I think that's the game. Never came
to
the
West. I have no information on this.
It was 1995, so everybody was done with Super Nintendo. Rest in peace. But yeah, the Donkey Kong Land on Game Boy did well enough that it, you know, spawned sequels as well. So
yeah,
three games total. I think it's like multi-million copies of that game.
One of the best-selling games on the Super Nintendo. It was huge when it came out.
Yeah, the love Donkey Kong Country, the whole trilogy overall, like three maybe not my favorite, but still like great games. The Donkey Kong games on Game Boy have just never been it. Like the Game Boy original ones, like they look awesome for what they are, but like they're not that good. But the Game Boy Advance ports of the Donkey Kong Country games are like some of the worst ports of all time. Like, and a lot of it just has to do with the music and the ambiance of Donkey Kong Country is so important to like the experience, and the GBA just couldn't handle it, and it like ruins it, and it looks bad, and like everything about it is just like ugh. And those Game Boy Color ports of Donkey Kong Country, and those were even worse.
I don't even remember those, so that's how forgettable they are to me. But chronologically, we take a little bit of a left turn, and we go to Diddy Kong Racing, which everybody seems to love a lot. And I think it's good. I think it's fun. I think maybe, it's a great kart racing game, but I think it's maybe a little blown out of proportion.
Did you like to race in the plane, the cart, or the other thing? Was it a boat?
The other thing.
Those are the only three types of transportation.
This was what Rare did. They took a very pure Nintendo idea, and then they were like, let's make it big.
Yeah.
Let's just make it as big as possible. And they did that with Banjo and DK, Donkey Kong 64. And they did it with Diddy Kong Racing to the point of maybe being a little overbearing, but it was fun to fly around in an airplane in this game. And it had a single player campaign, like a fully explorable world. It's actually kind of wild.
Yeah, it's a beloved kart racer out there that people are constantly.
It was also like the only N64 game to come out holiday 1997. I know GoldenEye came out in like August, but it was a tough time if you're an N64 owner.
Wow. I think I might have sold my N64 by then. The first one.
Wow.
I rebought it when Ocarina came out. I was like, okay.
See, I was a staunch N64 defender because I was such a Nintendo person. And then finally I got a PlayStation in like 1999 and I went, oh, okay, this is the truth, gang.
Yeah,
but I did love my N64. I was like, big party machine, big, great for multiplayer, but secretly in my heart, I was like,
well, I went through like that period where I was, you know, I must have been like 17 or 18 years old when this thing came. No, I think it was 18. And I played it and I loved it, but then I was like, ah, I'm too old for this baby stuff. I gotta get a PlayStation. They have blood and stuff on there.
It had GoldenEye, right, though. I mean, how do you top that?
Well, eventually,
that,
like,
was the best college dorm game you could possibly have.
You don't have to tell me because I figured it out. Like, when I was in the Air Force, my friend Craig had one of those like rear projection TVs, a 55 inch. He was the only one in the whole barracks that had one. And we would go up there to pregame before we went out to the bars, and more than once we just didn't leave his room.
Of course,
we would like, we'd be like, ah, crap, the bars are closed. Well, let's play some more GoldenEye or play some more Mario Kart, or you know,
Diddy Kong Racing is it's fantastic, but it's not the best kart racer of that generation because of course we know it's Crash Team Racing. Okay, everybody, show some love. Crash Team Racing just took everything Diddy Kong Racing did and made it better. That adventure mode, so damn good.
Okay, it's better than Diddy Kong Racing. I will give you that.
And so Mario Kart,
one
baby.
Point to Tim. Tim, you're in the lead right now. I forgot to tell everybody there's a point system.
Is this a scoreboard?
Yep.
So. Well, Giant Marie's perpetually in the lead. I'm never going to catch Giant Marie.
No one can.
I know it's hard.
Giant Marie gives like a plus 10 just for being.
Yeah, it's kind of like like the opposite of Final Fantasy. There's just numbers. You can't see it because if you're listening, but there's always numbers going above Mareep's head, like just additive 1, 1, 1.
Plus 1, plus 1, plus 3, plus
constantly.
5. Charging
it's pretty,
up.
It's pretty baller. But, speaking of baller, now, here we go.
All
Reb,
right, I'm here.
Strap in, because we are talking about the apex of Donkey Konglia, Donkey Kong 64.
I love
a
this
misunderstood
I love this
masterpiece.
Terrible game.
One of my favorite video gaming experiences of the Nintendo 64. This was after I rebought a Nintendo 64, and I love Donkey Kong 64. What can I say? Who's with me?
Yeah. It's terrible, but I love it so much. Yep. And you can't even tell me, if you went back and played it today, you wouldn't like it anymore. I went back and played a little bit a couple years ago. Still really freaking fun. Still think so many things are wrong with it, but I love it. I can't, I don't know what to tell you people.
Yeah. Barrett and Blessing over at Kind of Funny this is like some of their favorite games of all time.
Yeah.
Like
that's
love
because they're
Donkey Kong
geniuses.
64.
They're both two of the smartest, most handsome people.
That's what everyone says. Yeah. DK64, I think gets too much hate.
Yeah.
I think it's a little blown out of proportion, but I also understand where a lot of the criticism comes from. It is just too much. And when you compare it to the other Rare 3D platformers on this 64, I feel like the weakest of them.
Yeah, sure.
But
yeah, fair enough.
Still, I there's a lot to like in it. I just think that it might have been a little too ambitious for Donkey Kong. Like, I feel like there's something about it that, like, it, because it was Donkey Kong and it was a 3D Donkey Kong, people were expecting a Mario 64 type, like from Mario World to 64, from Country to this, and I don't think it's that.
I desperately want them to revisit the ideas of Donkey Kong 64 in another 3D, somewhat mostly open world Donkey Kong game with a similar style, with the idea of a hub world and a bunch of like satellite worlds, with the idea of having multiple Kongs you can switch between, but instead of forcing you to go back to the barrel every time, do something like a Genshin Impact system where you can just switch on the fly between them and use different Kongs to solve different puzzles and get, you know, like the whole very Metroidvania idea of, you're in this world and there's all these switches that you can't hit yet, but three worlds later you're going to drink a potion that will give all your Kongs the ability to activate them, so it's worth going back to Jungle Japes and doing all this again. There's so many ideas in Donkey Kong 64 that now in 2023 I'm like, we have better versions of this idea. They're just not all in one game together in the same way with the same personality, and I would love to see them try it again.
You really like the exploration of it all.
I love the exploration. I think that's what I like the most. Because I've told this story a million times on this podcast. People are probably sick of hearing me do this. My neighbor had it.
Never.
I didn't have it. So I played it at my neighbor's house. So like I was getting this game in like bite-sized pieces every weekend or every other weekend. So I'd go over, play like 2 hours of it and then not see it again for several weeks. And getting it in that like microdose installments where I would like explore a little and then I'd come back a couple weeks later and be like, oh my gosh, we saw that weird thing or that weird mushroom. Like, what do we do with that? We got to figure that out. And like puzzling over what we were going to find next the next time we played together all week. Oh, that was so fun. It was like quintessential childhood. I want that again. I'll never have it.
Yep. And I will say, before we move on from DK64, that it has for me another one of the coolest video game sort of moments. When to progress the game, you have to beat
the original
arcade version of Donkey Kong in the game. Donkey Kong was just so cool. Also, that might have been the hardest part of the game.
It is terrible. It is horrible game design. It is a miserable time. Also, it was cool when we finally did it.
Yep. So, and it was for the longest time, it was the only like actual way to play the original arcade outside of like illegal emulation or going to an arcade. So,
yeah.
All right. Donkey Kong Country Returns came to the Wii and 3DS, which was also, I think I got it from an eShop reward. Like I know I cashed in points. I have it on my 3DS. I also have it on Wii. You know, we've already talked about Donkey Kong Country. They just made it nicer looking.
It's good.
So yeah, it's a great way to play Donkey Kong Country if you have not before.
You talking about the 3DS version or?
Yeah, the 3DS and the Wii version.
Because like the Wii version, I don't think so. Like the motion controls, like the force motion controls of like having to like go like that for the roll. It was just a bad decision that was just like a byproduct of the Wii era where they were like trying to force all that stuff to happen. It worked in some games, didn't work in others. I know a lot of people really don't like it in Mario Galaxy of like having to do the waggle. I got used to it there. There's something there that felt right. DKC Returns, I feel like, is so superior on the 3DS. It's like not even close. Returns was announced at the first E3 I was ever at.
Nice.
And I was so excited just because we were getting a new 2D Nintendo game. Like, that just felt from retro. Like, what are you talking about? So cool. Yeah. And I enjoyed it quite a bit, but I feel like it's a perfect example. It's kind of like 3D Land we were talking about earlier, where Tropical Freeze is just so much better that I think retroactively actually makes Returns even worse.
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. Actually, Tropical Freeze is the next game chronologically to come out. It came out on the Wii U. Nobody had a Wii U, so they brought it to Switch, and they brought it with Funky Mode, which was a nice thing for them to do. And if you're not sure what Funky Mode is, you turn it on, everything's awesome. No, it's actually, it just makes it like, well, you can't die. Like, Funky comes and rescues. I can't remember. I reviewed this game on this. This is like the first big game that I reviewed for IGN. Was Tropical Freeze on the Nintendo Switch. It's a fun game. It's a hard game. It is a very good classic, like Donkey Kong, just savage, beat you to death.
Another game with great co-op, actually, both of them.
I didn't play it because I don't have any friends, but yeah, I've heard.
I first watched Donkey Kong Country Returns on the Wii and Tropical Freeze on the Wii U get played by my ex and his best friend in college dorm rooms, and it was like pure entertainment. Like, I'd be like reading or something, and I just sit there, and they'd just be shaking Wiimotes and yelling at each other about controlling the rocket barrels, and it was hilarious, and it was so much fun. And then finally, like, I got my own systems and played them myself, and I'm like, I love this. I want that stupid magic of co-op. I really did like Funky Mode, but I keep waiting for them to make another game in this series so I can play co-op and get some of the magic of that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you say that. Where is Donkey? Where is Donkey Kong?
Well, I want to talk about Tropical Freeze because like this is one of the best games ever made.
It's
like,
so good.
I feel like it's easily one of the best 2D platformers, but I feel like it does not get nearly as enough credit. It is not talked about. And I think people are they are talking about it. I still don't think it's enough. Anyone that's played this game, they get it. They know.
So good.
But the amount of love and care put into making it a full package is honestly pretty unrivaled. Like, it is so incredible that every single platform, every element of the stage has, it's, there's no just floating platforms. It's like everything is designed in a way that with the foreground background system they have, where you're kind of like jumping back and forth with the cannons or the barrels or whatever it is. Every single thing you're jumping on is being held up by some statue or some like formation, and
sometimes it crumbles.
It crumbles and it
bounces or whatever.
There is so much, like the whole game feels like a set piece.
It feels like touchable. It feels like you can feel all the pieces. Yeah.
And there's also a musicality to it all. That music's been such an important part to what makes Donkey Kong Country so good. And I feel like Tropical Freeze, I mean, the fidelity of it all, the arrangements are just so good, but they feel like they are part of the world that you're playing. And every single choice just feels like it's adding to itself. And you add on top of that, fun collectibles, great platforming, like a challenging gameplay, fun boss fights. Like Tropical Freeze really has it all.
Yeah, really tense moments. Like I think this was Tropical Freeze. This might be Country Returns, but it has like those moments where like the giant, I think this is Country Returns actually, the giant cheese wheel like comes down and chases you. But there's like a lot of moments like that in Tropical Freeze too, where just the whatever set you're in or whatever stage you're in just sort of like explodes out of itself, or like there's weird fruit or like jungle animals or like very things sort of burst out at you or following you or crumbling around you, like you were saying, in ways that make the stage feel really dynamic and force you to react to them while also using clever stage design to lead you where you're going to need to go next. Yeah. So if you're watching, you understand exactly what you're supposed to be doing.
And the roll was a button, not a waggle. So that was great too.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's a good game. It's a good game.
Yeah, it is a good game. And it's been 5 years since that game came out.
On the Switch?
Or maybe even more than that. On the Switch, it's been longer than that
when
it came out on the Wii U. But we have not seen any Donkey Kong. So I'm like, where's Donkey Kong? I know Shigeru Miyamoto's listening again. He always does. He writes in every week. Where's Donkey Kong?
I mean, so we know what Retro's doing, because Retro's the studio behind Tropical Freeze.
And Returns. I mean, I doubt it, though, at this point.
They're a little busy right now.
They're busy.
With, Metroid.
Yeah.
I mean, look.
All the rumors.
Given the choice, I'll take Metroid all day. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I will. Okay. I mean, I will 100%. Too. I would step over Donkey Kong's body if it meant Metroid Prime 4 were coming out today.
If you told me you had this opinion, I'd be like, sure. Seth's saying,
I feel like to me, there's very few people in the world that would want. People lost their minds when they announced that Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze was happening, and they're like, "You're doing another one of these instead of a Metroid Prime? On like, are you kidding me?" Like, and I think even now that'd be even more wild. I want both.
I mean, we live in a world where we can have both eventually.
All the rumors have been that Nintendo EAD has been working on a 2D Donkey Kong that is more like open and more of like exploration type game, but like at this point those rumors are like
who can say
years old. And
where's
like,
that Wind Waker Twilight port? Mm.
Exactly. I mean, but they're
putting Donkey Kong in instead of Link. That's what's been
taken.
Did they
announce
so long.
A Donkey Kong game that was more like Donkey Kong 94 recently?
Yeah.
Well, that's a port, or not a port. That's a remake of a GBA game, but Mario versus Donkey Kong, which is coming next
Mario
year.
Mario versus Donkey Kong.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that one.
There you go. There's Donkey Kong.
Very.
We found him. He's right there.
There he is in a gameplay that style.
He's not Donkey Kong
really
Country,
like
but
that much. But that's
I don't think that we're ever getting another Donkey Kong Country.
I don't think that's true. I don't think they're going to fully abandon it. I don't know that we're going to get it like tomorrow or next year even. But I absolutely think they circle back around to the dot, because I know Nintendo does insane things all the time, but this is a staple franchise for them that has been wildly successful in pretty much all of its iterations.
Yeah,
Define wildly successful.
Certainly up there. Tropical Freeze sold pretty well, if I remember right. Yeah.
By Wii U standards?
Well, yeah, I don't think it did
well on the Switch too?
I don't think it did that well. Like that, I'd be interested to see that. And also, we're talking about Nintendo, so even that well could still be like so much more than other games. But I honestly would be surprised if we saw another Donkey Kong Country ever. I think we'll get a new 2D Donkey Kong, but I think it's going to be something new and fresh. Like I think that we, to answer your question of where's Donkey, I think that we are due for a refresh. We're due for like hey, Donkey Kong's back with a new vibe, and it's not what you're used to from before.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in Mario. He was voiced by Seth Rogen.
Yeah.
So he still very much matters, obviously.
Yeah.
I I'm kind of with Reb, actually. It would be fun to see them return to the 3D exploration genre with a new perspective on Donkey Kong 64. I'd play that.
Yeah, I would. Right. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze sold 2 million units on the Wii U.
Okay.
Which, that's great.
For the Wii U.
Holy cow.
That's incredible for a Wii U game.
The Switch version sold 4.62 million units as of December 22.
Which, you know, obviously major win and
is
great game.
Better than several other Nintendo franchises. I think they're not going to ditch Donkey Kong.
But, I mean, I feel like if you're selling less, like half as much as a Luigi's Mansion game, I think that just kind of puts into perspective where we are in terms of like Nintendo's franchises. And like, I don't think that they look at it as like a major win.
Yeah, but Luigi's Mansion... So
9 million, right?
Yeah. So the reason Luigi's Mansion 3 has sold 12.82 million copies as of March 2023. Whoa. The reason why I'm not going to put those two things in the same category is because Luigi's Mansion 3 was a brand new game on the Switch. Tropical Freeze was a port on the Switch.
Although, New Super Mario Brothers U, though.
How much did that sell?
Insane. I think it's like 15 million or like 16, something like that.
Hold on. Now I'm going to go look up all the Nintendo Switch sales.
Well, hear me out. 2024, you're Donkey Kong.
You're the dog.
You got my number, Nintendo. We can talk it. We can talk it out.
You're Dixie Kong.
I'm just saying they keep weirder franchises alive. Pikmin's still doing okay.
Oh, no. That's... Donkey Kong is extremely important to Nintendo. I just don't know if the Donkey Kong Country specifically is going to keep coming back if it... They might go in a different direction.
I just think that when we look at the movie and we look at the game we're getting next year, which is Mario versus Donkey Kong, I predict they're going to lean into the rivalry between Mario and Donkey Kong. Like that really was kind of the point of the movie, and I can see them trying to bring that back in some form in the next game, in a platformer style, whether it's 3D or 2D. Like I think they're going to position Donkey Kong more as like a anti-hero.
It's a grittier take on Donkey Kong. So like the Frank Miller
Judge Dredd Donkey of the Kong. Mario universe.
Exactly. Finally.
Well, I hope that we get more Donkey Kong because I'm a big Kong fan. I love Donkey Kong.
Mm-hmm.
I
love, great guy.
All things about that simian video game man.
Friend
all. Necktie. So, all right. I want to real quickly mention that Tom's Mario RPG preview is up right now, and you should go and check it out because it's very good. I am excited because I've never played Mario RPG. And from what I understand, I am in for a treat.
Dude, I'm with you. I've never played it either. I'm so stoked.
Y'all?
Yeah.
It's good.
I know.
It's good. So really I've actually been playing the remake. So I can give a real quick little preview myself here. Mario RPG is a very important game to me because when it came out, I was like 6 years old or something. Definitely could not read. And I went to Blockbuster, rented this Mario game. I didn't know what RPG meant, but I was like, this looks super cool. And I'll never forget bringing it home, putting it in, and just looking at my dad and being like, I don't know, man. Just jumping on the bed in the beginning. And I'm like, and he's just like, are you just going to jump on the bed? I'm like, I don't know what else to do. Like, I was just so confused. It was like way, way above my pay grade. And then years later, allegedly, I decided to try to play this game again through means that were, you know, allegedly legal. Mm-hmm. And it was the first ROM that I ever played. And I didn't understand. I was dumb when I was 6. I was still dumb when I was 16. I didn't understand you needed to put a ROM in an emulator. So I was just trying to double click on it and it wasn't opening. And I'm like, what is going on? Eventually figured it out, played through Mario RPG. And I was like, oh, everyone was right. This was worth the wait. This was worth all the trauma that it put me through. But to play through this new one now, I'm about 5 hours in. I am just blown away by the love and care being put into this. It reminds me so much of the Link's Awakening remake that they did a couple years ago, where it is a totally brand new art style, but it keeps the vibe and the style of the original, and it feels like a worthy remake. Like, it doesn't just feel like, like a lot of times we'll see remasters or remakes, and it's like, yeah, sure, it looks prettier, but you lost the feeling, the magic of what the original had. Like, I love the Crash Bandicoot games, despite their quality, whatever. The remakes, I'm happy they happened, but they lost the style of the original games, and it feels like you're just playing something that like looks prettier, but it doesn't feel like the same thing. This feels like Mario RPG if it was made in 2023. Multiple nice. Times I'm playing on handheld on my Switch OLED, and I need to just pause and just look at the screen, just be like, how does this look this good? It is completely just mesmerizingly beautiful. The asymmetric view still provides a couple problems in terms of some of the there's a lot more platforming in this game than you'd expect, and some of the jumps can be a little difficult to discern where you're jumping. The combat is going to be very familiar to people, even if they haven't played this game, that have played any Paper Mario, any Mario and Luigi game. It is very action focused. You're hitting a lot of buttons, a lot of like pressing buttons as like Mario jumps on an enemy or something. But the story is so charming. This game is so much funnier than I remembered it being. It uses animation to tell jokes constantly, and it's really weird and unique, and like it's straight out of 1996 but works just as well today. I'm very much having a great time with this game, and the music, oh my god,
that's what I was gonna ask.
Yeah, done by Shimomura, who has also done the Kingdom Hearts soundtrack. I mean, come on, like, just an all-timer for sure.
Her Mario music work is really good. Like, she did
so good.
The one that she's done a bunch of them, but the one that sticks out to me was Mario and Luigi Paper Jam. She did the music for. Mwah, phenomenal. And really good stuff.
I don't think it gets better in the Mario world than Mario RPG. So many iconic tunes. And what's really cool about this version is there, like, she came back to arrange new versions, but then you can also listen to the original soundtrack if you want. So
yeah. I was listening to the battle theme this morning, it just sounds like you're having a little party. It doesn't even sound like a mean combat theme. It's just...
And there's new CG cutscenes to kind of like help propel the story forward a little bit. And it feels like they belong. Like, I think that's the best thing I can say about the game, is that like this feels like an incredibly faithful remake in maintaining what made the original special. And I think this one's going to catch a lot of people off guard. Like, I think that it's going to go a little under the radar, but I hope that enough people give it a shot, because I really think they're going to love it.
Great year for RPGs.
I like the new triple move idea. I like that they actually enhanced and built upon the battle system rather than having a straight, very faithful remake of the original game.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want to do. You got to improve if you're going to remake a game. And this, I'm so excited to play this. It comes out, what, November 17th, I believe?
So we're going to have so much fun, Seth.
Very, very soon. I know. I can't wait. And then we can talk about it when we come back from the Thanksgiving break.
We can.
And how like much fun it is. And it's gonna be so great. But go check out Tom's preview to get another side of things from Tim. Tim and Tom, don't get them mixed up. Mm-mm. It's close, but it's
different,
not
guys.
The same. Two different people. So yeah, go check that out. All right. I want to hit question block real quick, because we've got Tim here. People love question block. We've got a good one here. Ariana Olmeda asks, what's everyone's favorite Pokemon?
It's Big Mareep, obviously.
Obviously.
Gigantamax Mareep.
That's literally everyone's favorite Pokemon.
Are these its
Big
ears?
Mareep.
Don't listen.
So, yeah, yeah. do not listen.
Where are its ears?
I am a Pokemaniac, as they say. I don't go anywhere without my Pokemon Go Plus.
Oh my god.
Right?
Are you playing Pokemon Sleep, dude?
I did for a while, but it wasn't keeping my attention. I'm going to be honest with you. And also, this is Pokemon Go is a full-time job.
Any more
all
people
right?
to play Pokemon Sleep with?
So I've been doing this. My favorite Pokemon of all time is Caterpie. All right? I don't think I've met a single person in the world like me.
Every Pokemon is someone's favorite. I'm really glad I met the Caterpie.
The Caterpie guy. It's me. I don't know why. Ever since I was little, I think it had something to do with, you know, Caterpie was Ash's first that he caught in the show.
Nice.
And the whole Butterfree arc. Like, are you kidding me? Come on. It still makes me cry. But when I played Pokemon for the first time, like Blue, I was upset that I had to choose between Charmander, Bulbasaur, or Squirtle. I was like, I want Caterpie. So I literally... tossed my starter out and caught a Caterpie, and I treated the Caterpie like my partner Pokemon.
Nice.
Wow.
That's adorable.
That's like hard mode. That's really impressive.
Yeah.
That's a great story. Look.
Yeah. Look at my guy, dude. He's just out here.
That's cute.
He's just a buddy. He's
living his life.
Caterpillars are kind of
just loves everybody.
Aww.
Yeah, but Caterpie, very cute.
Yeah.
So, all right, I respect that. Kat, what about you? What's your favorite Pokemon?
Hard to choose, actually.
It is. There's thousands of them now.
Yeah, I think there's more than 1,000. In my room, I have a couple of Umbreons and a Gengar and
Umbreon.
Things like that.
goes. Yeah.
I tend to think of Pokemon in terms of teams that I've enjoyed using over the years, and I have certain favorite like dragon types and Metagross and whatever, but I don't know if I absolutely had to choose just one. I'll just say Umbreon, sure.
Oh, great choice.
So cute.
Fantastic choice.
I love shiny Umbreon.
Oh, the blue.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
One way or another, I usually have it in my parties. Same with Gengar.
Gengar, also a great choice.
Both of them are very much a mood.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Nice. All right. This is going to be hard to follow Reb.
So genuinely, and not doing a bit with the big Mareep, Mareep is genuinely up there.
Really?
Mareep's entire line. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I caught one. I don't remember which
Mareep's
version
like,
it's in. It was in either
that.
Gold or Silver, but it was one of the early Pokemon. And Gold and Silver were like my favorite. I played them in tandem because I got them both for Christmas. I didn't understand. There was like basically no difference between them. So I was playing them back and forth. But I caught Mareep in one of them, and like Ampharos was part of my team for a long time. My actual favorite has changed over the years, though. And my current buddy is Alolan Raichu. Because the lore around Alolan Raichu is that Alolan Raichu became so cute and round because the Pikachu it evolved from ate too many round and fluffy pancakes.
I love that.
And good that just him. Speaks to me. So.
I totally get that.
Alolan Raichu and our buds.
A real quick Pokemon Gold and Silver story to maybe redeem myself for how stupid I was when I was a 6-year-old that couldn't read. I fell in love with Pokemon when I was 8 when it came to America. Red and Blue, obviously, I was obsessed with. Gold and Silver. Could not be more excited for a video game. We're getting Pokemon 2. Are you kidding me? Let's go.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget my dad. We were in Chinatown, and I look over, and the Pokemon Silver was there. And I was like, how is this even possible? It was a bootleg copy.
Of course, yeah.
You know, but like, I didn't know the difference. And I was like, I need this. I need this thing now. And my dad was like, I guess we got to get it. Because it wasn't coming out to America for like another year.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, just blown away that I had access to this, and I remember putting it into my Game Boy, and it was in Japanese, duh. Yep. But I was like, uh-oh. Like, I am 8 years old. I guess at that point I was like 9 or 10. I was like, I do not know how to read Japanese. I barely know how to read, period. I remember printing a FAQ from GameFAQs of like how to play through it and like what different Japanese symbols meant things.
GameFAQs.
Yeah. And I somehow beat Pokemon Gold in Japanese.
Dude. That like, rules.
It makes legendary. No sense how I did that when I couldn't even play Mario RPG a couple years back, you know?
So Tim, when I was living in Japan, Pokemon Diamond and Pearl came out, and I could not wait to play it. I had to play it, but then of course it was in Japanese and nobody else in America had it because at the time they didn't have simultaneous worldwide releases. So I was having to lurk on the Serebii forums and basically look at the mega thread of people playing through it because there were certain parts of Diamond and Pearl where I didn't know where I was supposed to go next and what I was supposed to do. So I would get stuck. But that was my first experience playing Pokemon in Japanese.
I love it.
Near and dear to my heart.
I feel like that is the next level like of Pokemon just playership. Is if you played a game through to its climax in Japanese, it's like you are S tier Pokemon Pokemaniac.
There was something,
nothing but respect.
I mean, Tim's got me, like, he got me cupped.
Yeah.
I mean, I was gonna say, like, my kids were so excited about Pokemon that they kind of forced themselves to learn to read by playing Pokemon. Mm-hmm. Like,
straight
they could
up.
Read a little bit, but by the time they were done playing a Pokemon game, they were just, like, reading books and everything.
Isn't
it's
it
awesome.
Incredible yeah. that this franchise has that effect on people that... It's like, I will teach myself how to read just to understand what these adorable animals are doing when they fight.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it's all crazy. Jokes aside, like literally, like Pokemon taught, like was a huge factor in me wanting to learn how to read and not like read the games, but then like the comics and the books and everything. It just got me so in to the point that that was the gateway for me to Final Fantasy and like playing.
That's how Tim learned Japanese before he learned English.
Well, there's that too. I mean, honestly, just like a familiarity with language, period. Like it was just such a different time. But it's. Pokemon was such a great kind of like jump off point to RPGs as a whole, like playing Pokemon Red and Blue in 98 and then leading into Final Fantasy X in 2001. I feel like was just such a perfect kind of progression of like learning a totally new type of video game that I now am obsessed
with. It's a lot of people's gateway RPG and a lot of people's
first video game. I was going to say, like, I can remember a lot of conversation at the time where people were saying, like, this is a gateway to RPG for JRPGs for children.
Yeah.
And it's true.
Dragon Quest for babies. Yeah.
I was much too old, but I did still get into like the Pokemon scene a little bit. But my favorite Pokemon is Honedge, and I'm the only one who likes that little funny sword man.
Every Pokemon is someone's favorite.
I love it.
I don't know why. I love Honedge so much. It's just this delightful little sword, and he's got a cute little sword face. But unfortunately, I'm sad to say, we've run out of time.
Oh, no.
Tim, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Tim Gettys, Gettys, or just on Kind of Funny, youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. We do a bunch of game shows every day, including Kind of Funny Games Daily that Rem's been on a bunch of times.
It's great.
Hell yeah.
Kat's been on, too. Seth, you've never been on.
I've never been on. I'm way over here.
Yeah. One day we'll get you here. It'll be great.
Hell yeah. I'm looking forward to it. But that is all the time we have for this week's NVC. Before we go, a few favors to ask. Watching us on YouTube, leave us a like and a nice comment. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, please leave us a review. I've checked. I've seen people have left reviews and they hate me. It helps to spread the good NVC word. We will be forever in your debt. Remember, NVC is the only place where you can
get the thing.
Getty's the thing. That's what everyone was making the joke.
Oh, sorry. We can do it again. Getty's the thing.
I love it.
Getty's the thing.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.